When did you know there was something not quite right with your body?
A few days later, I'm meditating, minding my business, and I feel a pain. And I'm like, oh, what's that? And I go to touch and I feel a lump.
Our next guest is a global Nike trainer and wellness expert.
What's up, fam? Tara Nicholas here. And this is your 15-minute hottie lower body with the one and only Megan Thee Stallion,
aka the hot girl coach.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, there's something growing inside me that shouldn't be. And everyone is telling me it's nothing. But obviously, there's literally something growing because I don't know what created this situation. I obviously did something wrong.
Yeah.
I obviously caused this. I'm obviously to blame, me, the wellness person.
Yeah.
Who's always talking about all the things. Like, am I a hack? Like, am I lying? For me, it's continuing to do my spiritual work, continuing to honor myself. The way that shows up now is actually in boundaries. My body is amazing and let me honor her better. So it's been very clarifying to like, I can only do what I can do.
Yeah.
And that's going to have to be okay. I haven't even really like talked about it yet, but it was.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Makes me want to cry immediately.
Tara, welcome to the Ginny Show.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you about a lot of things today, but I want to start with one of my favorite drinks, which is tea.
Yes.
And you have a series of community events called Tea Time with Tea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, what did you feel was missing about conversations around these topics of grief, mm-hmm. relationships, mental health that compelled you to start this?
I love that question. I feel like I have to start from the beginning, if you will. I've always felt like these are conversations that are necessary and a part of life because I have been a creative, a freelancer in New York for a long time. And so they would come up in this like, woe is me freelance setting where it's like, oh, I didn't get this gig or like the business, this or that. But during the pandemic, a dear friend of mine died by suicide, and it was heartbreaking because as far as we understood and as far as what we as like our little community understood, she was killing it. She had the gigs, she had love in her life, financially, she seemed stable. So there was nothing kind of big and loud to be like, oh, well, we did notice X, Y, and Z. And I mean, it was pandemic, so it's not like we were seeing each other all the time. But I bring it from a place of like, that moment scared me and hurt and terrified me. Because it was like, we all are extremely empathic and we ebb and flow with our moods. What happened this time that made her hurt end the way it ended, right? And so it was like, I am not a licensed therapist. I don't have any degrees to legitimize me doing this, but I have to do something because we can't have, like, this was no longer someone like out in the ethers who yeah. had this tragic story, right? Like, this is someone I know. This is someone who I cared for deeply that I love. I have to do what I can to at least contribute to this hopefully not happening to someone else I know. Because what we don't want to admit is by the time someone is hurting that deeply, they are not talking about it.
Exactly.
They're just too deep in the hurt. You're not going to hear about it. And so if all I can contribute is a space for conversation where I always have licensed therapists there in case, you know, things feel a little more heavy, but it's not about here are experts to tell you how to live a better life. We are all experts in something. So when we gather for these sessions, we all write down what we want to work on and what we'd like support with. And then we pick from a basket, and each person picks and they can say, oh, that was mine or not. They can stay anonymous. And then we work through it as a group. And it just always ends up filling my cup. And I always end up learning and almost always end up crying, but from joy, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where it all started. And I knew, you know, I could attract a lot more people if I made it a whole moment, like alcohol and this and that. And I was like, but that's the opposite of what I want to create. I want to create something very simple, no fluff, just come, let's have conversation. There's DJ at first, like get us comfortable.
Yeah.
And there's tea because I love tea.
What's your favorite tea?
Oh my. Well, I have to say the last few years, aside from, so I can't drink a lot of caffeine because it like really gives me the jitters, but sometimes I'm like truly dragging.
Yeah.
So if I'm going caffeine, it would be a really nice jasmine tea or a matcha.
Yeah.
If I'm feeling like spending some money. And as far as herbal teas, you know, good old ginger turmeric or hibiscus. Or I got this lovely blend from Brooklyn Tea, which is where I started these events. And I was so grateful to the founders for supporting me in this vision. And they make a blend and it's soursop leaves and sage. And sometimes I'll even sprinkle a little ginger. And it's a very herbaceous flavor, in my opinion, in the best way. So,
right.
And they call it the healer. So I love it, especially. And I'll, a lot of the time, if I host an event, I'll have them put that out as like the tea I want people to drink.
I love the fact of tea, like any warm drink, tea, coffee, hot chocolate,
yes.
Hot apple cider.
Yeah.
It does bring that feeling of community and conversation and connection. Because think about how many people have fallen in love over coffee or broken up over coffee. But it's a conversation that needs to be had, right? But I love the resourcefulness that you've catered in this space to, because I feel that even just as a community, being able to share and having that space to even find language to put to your emotions, mm-hmm. to how you're feeling,
mm-hmm.
that's really helpful,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes we don't have that vernacular to be like, this is how I'm feeling. You don't connect the dots sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you find that people's aversion to therapy sometimes, I'm wondering in this space, because you have therapists there, mm-hmm. how helpful is that for them?
I think it's incredibly helpful because my focus is on communities of color. And what's felt really special, because the way I started it, it was like, again, it was pandemic. And I was like, how am I going to get people to show up? You know, I've lived in this neighborhood at the time I started in Bed-Stuy. And so I was flyering up and down the street and walking into businesses that I frequent already who know me and being like, hey, can I leave flyers? And just through that process, like talking to people. So already just wanted to get a sense of like, is what I'm thinking going to be helpful? Like, what do you guys think of this idea? Like, would you want to attend? And like, how can I make it better? And really, there was no like suggestion of how to make it better. It was like, it was just, there's a lot of silence in our community. Like, I think about my parents who both went through very early traumas. My family's from Haiti. I'm first generation. And while they've had very full, happy lives, like for the most part, I say for the most part, because my dad at one point did have a little therapy, but my mom never did. Mm-hmm. And she's been through a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
And so you're talking about people where talking about your feelings, trying to process in a lot of ways was a luxury. Everything feels like it's burning down. You're not going to sit and talk about it and wallow in it and make it worse. In their minds, it makes it worse. You just have to get through it and move on. So when you offer a space where people can just listen, or they can share, or they can offer suggestions to someone else, it helps someone who maybe doesn't feel like they get to offer anything helpful to anyone, or other people where it's like, mine is about, I'm having trouble with my roommate, you know? And it may not be that deep, but the fact that they just got to like, in a group, get some suggestions of like how to handle this roommate situation or meet other people. Like one woman was like, I really want to be able to like teach more. And my now husband suggested to her like, hey, like, why don't you hit up these professors on your own and tell them like you don't, you know, and he gave her like a whole step-by-step of a way it would work. And then she did it and it worked.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's career related. Sometimes it's, you know, they're looking for courage. Like I continue to be surprised that the space is valuable. I continue to be surprised because I purposefully keep it very simple. Yeah. And I don't want alcohol there. And I only want like whole foods there. And I have the therapist who always have something helpful to share, but a lot of the time they don't actually do that much talking, you know, because it's about the attendees and what they had to share and just watching people support each other. And I'm there to kind of make sure everyone's being heard, being seen, and that, you know, if I need to kind of shift in one direction or another, I do so. But for the most part, it creates a space of such love and respect that I don't need to do that much,
yeah.
You know, and it's really, it's inspiring.
Sometimes you just need to be that container or that space holder.
Yes. And right? That's what a lot of the, you know, I mean, my background, meditation and Reiki, that is the woo-woo speak for, like, I just need to create the container.
Exactly.
And let people have their own, like, in Reiki, they believe that it's not the hands, my hands healing you. It's me creating the container for you to remember how to heal.
Exactly.
For you to access your own, like, connection to source. For you to remember what to do. And that has always seemed so powerful to me and also takes the edge off. Like, I don't need to fix anyone. And in turn, I've learned I don't need to fix myself.
Absolutely.
You know?
What you said too about, you know, you're teaching people to kind of remember, mm-hmm. but it's also for people to unlearn some of the things that they have been taught. And when you said that your parents have gone through some trauma, like your mom too. Mm-hmm. My parents are the same. And then I think about their parents and then their parents.
Yeah.
Like, my grandmother was 14, 16 when she started having children.
Right.
And then you have 10 children. Mm-hmm. So you don't have the bandwidth to give full attention to every child. That's going to have its impacts.
Right.
And then you culturally and even generationally, there are hesitations to therapy or, you know, wellness in the mental space because hesitation of medical providers. But the other part is culturally, it can appear like, oh, there's something wrong with us. I don't want people knowing. There's this secrecy around.
My parents, well, I have a family member who to this day is like, why would I get therapy? I'm not crazy.
And I have a family member who says, why would I pay someone to tell me what I already know?
Yeah.
So it's
like, how is talking about it going to make me feel better?
Yeah. And that's that sort of hesitation that is learned or picked up from certain parenting or energies that is felt.
And what you were even touching on before, where it was like, my parents grew up in a very old school, conservative Catholic society. Mm-hmm. It took very little for you to lose the respect of the culture.
100%. People judge you straight away.
They judge you. So there's a reason why you don't go to a therapist. There's a reason why you don't want any of that getting out.
Yeah.
So it's secrecy, it's protection, it's safety.
Yeah.
And then over time, it gets morphed into, like, I was going to say a lie, but it's not even about the lie as much as it's just not the truth.
Yeah.
The truth is, I'm sad. I'm having a hard time. I need help. But all these other things get in the way. And so you busy yourself and you can't even sit with your own emotions.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, I was a unplanned baby.
Yeah.
I was a miracle. I'm trying to repurpose it because I used to always say I was a oops baby.
Yeah.
And my therapist was like, maybe we can find another way,
a different way to frame that, yeah.
Right? So this is me trying. And so all of the people I love the most in this world are all aging at the same time.
Right.
And just watching when there's never been like an infrastructure created to help yourself feel whole, help yourself feel well, then you add very real health problems, neurological problems. And I'm watching people be trapped into whatever state they were in with then real issues on top. And it breaks my heart because my instinct is to be like, how can I help? How can I save? How can I like remove the burden, the pain? And I'm only now learning, like, I can't.
Yeah.
I can be there for them in the capacity that I know I can. And beyond that, I can't.
Did you have rescuing and people-pleasing tendencies as a result?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's deep, honey.
I know. Everything. It's like
so
the fawning, right? Like, the knee-jerk reaction.
I think the, like, oops, baby thing.
Yeah. It's like, I'm a mistake. I need to apologize for my... Yeah, that's how you feel.
Yeah.
Because I was an oops baby too, because I came 11 years later. And the way my mum on each birthday told me my conception story was...
I'm laughing because I can feel the trauma coming. And I'm like...
Yeah, it was traumatic. I'm like, I really didn't need to know how I was conceived. When I'm about to blow out my candles, didn't really need to have that visual done. Thank you. But also, like, the whole process of, I really couldn't be bothered pushing you. I'm like, so I was an accident and kind of unwanted.
Right.
What I see. So you have that memory, but again, it's that those little nuances that are ingrained with you, like in therapy, my therapist constantly talks to me about your fawning. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just like, this is how I survive. Did you find that too?
My therapist had this beautiful word that I was parentized. made into a parent at a young age. I can't remember the word. And I remember when she said it, one, it felt like a read. It was like, first of all, don't tell me about myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And second of all, just to sit with that, because in my mind, that was just like what it, that's just life, you know? Like, I had to, you know, people always very, you know, you take it as a compliment, like, oh, you're so mature.
Yeah.
But not realizing like, yeah, because I felt like I had to like carry so much of the emotions in the family and kind of do everyone's emotional processing for them. And it was a weird form of people please, because it was almost like, I have very loving parents. They're flawed and they're so loving and dedicated to me, and I'm dedicated to them. And also I had this deep like fear of being abandoned. And no one ever threatened it. No one ever did it. It never happened. But I think it was in the unspoken that I felt like I need, like I was a straight freaking A student. I got all the scholarships. I mean, like perfect golden child.
Winning isn't for everybody, which is why.
Yeah.
Nike.
Yeah. Yeah,
makes all sense.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the reason why was because some part of me knew like there is no room to misbehave, to have an issue. There's no room. And like, yeah, great. I have an amazing work ethic. It's taken me very far in this life. And now, as I process and want to get closer to the stage of being a mother myself, it's like the process of unburdening, quite literally, you know, with everything that, you know, we've touched on briefly offline about fibroids and just any kind of health issue, you realize like how much you're carrying and how much you just don't need to play this role.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned these things about being a parent at a young, or to force to survive in environments that, you know, children, kids, they're not mentally ready for.
Yeah.
There is this book I'm reading called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents,
ooh,
which touches on some of the things that you said. And I'm like, oh, I read like three pages. I'm like, all right, I'm sending a copy to every single person in my family, but I should keep reading before I do that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But it is true. Like these things that we learn and the choices that leads us to make as adults are not always the best for ourselves.
Right.
Right. Uterine fibroids affect an estimated 70 to 80% of women before the age of 50. And Black women in particular, they're significantly more likely to develop them, often earlier and with more severe symptoms. Yet they are underdiagnosed and underserved in healthcare settings. When did you know there was something not quite right with your body?
Oh, man, it gave me goosebumps just like going back to that place. Part of it, again, was back to my friend Sharon, who passed. But in the pandemic, something I was very struck by was how creative so many of my friends were. In the midst of all of our work shutting down and things feeling so bleak, I just saw them creating such beautiful work. While me, my trauma was showing, all I could do was be as organized as possible. Like, I got a bookkeeper. I was, like, trying to get an accountant. Like, that's how I spent my time when I was unemployed. It was like, how can I get myself together?
Couldn't sit still.
And then eventually I got to a place of, like, oh, my God, what is this? I feel calm. But, like, eventually the one time I felt creative, I, like, woke up one day and had to create this, like, women's series. During this women's series, I found out about my friend. I was hearing interesting stories about fibroids, all these different things, because I created the topics. And then a few days later, I'm meditating, doing my little meditation, minding my business, and I feel a pain. And I'm like, oh, what's that? And I go to touch, and I feel a lump. So I assume the worst. I'm like, there's a lump.
Yeah.
One shouldn't be. And at the time, I think, again, pandemic, all these things. My insurance had ended. I didn't know where to go. So I'm asking friends for recommendation. And when I go, fast forward, I end up at the gynecologist, really sweet, lovely woman. And she's like, oh, girl, it's just fibroids. And I'm like, okay. She's like, yeah, you know, like they're not going to get in your way. Like if you wanted to like get pregnant or whatever, you can get pregnant with fibroids or you can get surgery, like whatever you want to do. But it's not a big deal. You'll be fine. Let me know. And I left. Like, I remember calling my fiance at the time, and I think he was a little confused by my reaction because I still was as amped, if not more amped, leaving than I was going in. He was like, babe, like, isn't this good? Like, this isn't like something more serious. And I'm like, there's something growing inside me that shouldn't be. And everyone is telling me it's nothing. But obviously, there's literally something growing. And at the time, I'd already had like all these weird symptoms leading up to it. Like I'd noticed my libido had really gone down. Mm. I was having insomnia. I was having experiences of, you know, I'm extremely active. And I would go to work out and it's like my muscles weren't like there for me. Like there was no strength in me. And so I'd already gone through all these things and told doctors something was wrong. And so to finally get to this point where now there's a bump, now there's another doctor telling me it's just fibroids. I was just furious. I felt gaslit. I also felt very isolated. And I just didn't understand how it could be something so treated like a pimple.
Yeah. And it makes me think, what do you wish doctors would stop saying to women when they come to them with
oh my gosh. I think two things happen. Either it's DEFCON 5 and they make you feel even more stressed and chest tight and like panicked, or it's this like, it's fine. It happens to everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone gets them. And even if you remove them, they'll come back. It's this like dismissive, but actually really dark way of treating you where you're like, is this good or is it bad? Like what does this mean? And what can I do? Is there a diet? Is there this? And then I remember this gyno in particular being like, I don't want you to get scammed or waste your money on any kind of diet or anything. There is nothing you can do for fibroids.
So there was no process laid out. No.
It was surgery or nothing.
Right. So that was the options that you had.
That was my first exposure to the diagnosis and to it being a part of my life. And I left very devastated. And yeah, so that was part one.
Part one. Okay. What were some of the emotional or invisible tolls this experience took on you that most people wouldn't think about?
There was a very gradual series of sensations and experiences that were happening. And because fibroids are not properly researched and studied, and even like given the kind of medical weight that they should, right? What happened was, again, I'd mentioned like my libido had gone down, my energy, I was having sleeping issues. Because why? My hormones were all out of whack, which is contributing to them growing. But what's the original thing that caused the hormones to go out of whack? I don't know. And no one was trying to help me understand. So now it's like, you know, during sex, certain positions, I feel actual like pain.
Yeah.
And so now I'm trying to negotiate how do I can't never have sex, you know, I just moved in with my partner. Some of my most amazing professional opportunities are coming in. And so much of them revolve around my body and I'm swollen. I don't feel comfortable in myself. My clothes fit weird. And so, yeah, it was just a level of exhaustion and self-consciousness and discomfort in my own body mixed with, again, because of that initial how I'm being spoken to and dealt with and mixed with my own stuff, I now don't feel like I can trust my own instincts, which have been the things that have guided me so much through my whole life. I now don't know what am I supposed to eat or not eat? What am I supposed to do or not do? Because I don't know what created this situation. I obviously did something wrong.
Yeah.
I obviously caused this. I'm obviously to blame, me, the wellness person who's always talking about all the things. Like, am I a hack? Like, am I lying? Like, how could this? And then you start to process it all. And something that a few of the different holistic practitioners I was working with said to me was like, is it possible that this is coming up for you now because of all the good work you've been doing? Like, fibroids are tied to ancestral trauma. And is it possible that your body's finally ready to look at this and release it? Like for you to actually start to pay attention to a different part of your body that needs your attention? And I'm like, I mean, I guess, but it'd be easier for it to just leave.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
But so it was really challenging. And I think too, in the past, like if I'd ever had any kind of like body thing, I could do a juice cleanse and it'd be gone. And this was, I don't think I grasped the level of extreme stress I was under from pre-pandemic into the pandemic and starting to come out of the pandemic. And now with this diagnosis and not realizing the way that my main coping mechanism is to control. And so I'm like, if I control every little thing I put into my mouth and I drink and everything, that I will be able to heal and I'll be able to move on. And everything I was doing, I did a series of cleanses, all things I would genuinely recommend, because for how large they ended up getting at a certain point, I didn't look it and I didn't feel what I should have felt medically.
Right.
Like when I eventually had my first consultation with a surgeon, something she said to me was, she was like, I cannot believe you're not horribly constipated with the worst back pain and like bleeding every cycle and like all this stuff. And I felt deep gratitude for everything I'm doing still being helpful, while also, yeah, it took me a while to process, like, why isn't my body like expelling this? I've created the container.
Yeah.
And I know women that it's worked for them who didn't even do as many things as I did. So it's like, what am I doing wrong? It all came back to like, why am I not enough? Like, what else can I control? Round and round we go.
The core wounds just showed up again. It's interesting too, because I'm the same, like, all right, let me do what I need to do workout-wise and I'll get this. And then when it doesn't happen, everything mentally shows up, like what you haven't worked on.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you move from that space and how did you navigate through it to a more, I guess, grounded place?
Now I'll start kind of where I've landed. And where I've landed is, what is my life without control? Like, what else is there? And my kind of the theme for myself in this season of my life is the word flow. Because I genuinely feel like if I can't control every variable, because I love water, I was like, is there a way for me to be able to actually like ebb and flow with the current that shows up? And it doesn't take away my ability to kind of be in the driver's seat of my life. It doesn't take away my integrity or autonomy, sovereignty, but it gives me an opportunity to not feel like I have to like be in a constant state of vigilance and a constant state of like, because again, I still have all the voices of all those medical professionals, the ones that weren't as kind, that weren't as loving, you know, the ones that were like, they can come back. They probably will, you know, just get a hysterectomy. Like, they just talk to you any old way. And so it's very easy to just live in the many things that can still go wrong. I promised myself coming out of surgery, I was like, I'm not going to regiment my eating. I've always been a very healthy eater. I was like, I'm going to let myself try to find myself again.
Yeah.
Not just with food, but like with like, okay, how do I feel today? Like, maybe today I only want veggies, and maybe tomorrow I want like a beautiful rack of lamb, and to like leave room for that has worked for me my whole life. And I learned that being like, I turned into like a strict vegan trying to heal, which worked very well. And also what started to come up in some of my energy sessions and even acupuncture sessions was like, your liver cheese really low. And is it possible that maybe your body is tired of cleansing?
Yeah.
And you need to just nourish it more. Like maybe some bone broth, you know, like it was like practitioners that are, they're like, I'm not trying to piss you off, but your body's telling me something different, you know? And again, because everything I was doing is from a place almost like punishment.
Yeah.
Like, obviously I did this and therefore it's not about nourishing. It's about cleansing. It's about removing. It's about forcing out. You know, fibroids are a feminine issue.
Yeah.
So they need a feminine approach. And a lot of what helped me was, one, like 2 months before my surgery, I was introduced to another practitioner who she's a midwife is her main gig, if you will.
Yes.
I don't want to minimize what she does. And she took all the things I'd already been doing. It was already part of her her view. It's a well woman method. And it just, she helped it make sense and be a little more like soft.
Yeah.
And so like step one being do nothing and just observe. Step two, maybe there's some more spiritual work, some meditation, some chants, some kriyas. Step three, maybe adding like one herb at a time to your regimen. You know, step four, and now I'm just like ad-libbing, but it'd be like one thing at a time to add versus this like attack on your system all at once and trying to like force instead of giving your body, your spirit a chance to like observe and communicate with you. And so that made a big difference and helped me then on the other side of surgery kind of have a much more loving approach to healing.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting too how you went back to that self-critical space.
Yeah.
And it's often quite hard to silence that critic, especially if it's been something that you've tied survival to, which is what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. How are you working through that and how is it helping you shift the way you show up for yourself and your body, really?
Because I'm in the fitness space and I'm an actor, like seemingly everything I was doing, it's like for the gaze of others. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit, and again, like social media can sometimes really destroy words or phrases, but like it's like reclaiming me and everything I do is for me. And yes, there's going to be like so much of my work is going to benefit others, but to remember that it's okay for it to benefit me. And so now, like when I move my body, like I started being more consistent. I started as a dancer and then I'm grateful I got to dance professionally and do all these wonderful things. And then I stopped pursuing it as a job. And in the last year, I've become consistent with taking class again and it's all for me. Mm. I'm not working towards a job. Like I don't have some big goal. It's just, it brings me joy. There's a live pianist. And I get to just feel like I'm floating. Sometimes I'm like, wow, I actually look kind of good today. And sometimes I'm like, oh, girl, not so much. But no matter what, I just always feel amazing because just dance is where I started and where I began really making sense of the world. Like, oh, if I like work hard at like this one exercise, like it gets better. It just like simplifies things.
Yeah. But I want to move on to this beautiful anecdote you shared with me kind of off camera or off air, let's just say.
Yeah.
This vivid, joyful memory you had of dancing and showering in the rain in the backyard with your mum in Togo. And you called that a moment of freedom and visceral play. Mm-hmm. Now, we live in NYC, so backyards aren't as easy to come by.
Right.
So what is your go-to ritual to feel that same joy and lightness?
That is the question. And part of that, I think I was just having this conversation with I just had therapy yesterday. And one of the things we talked about was like, she wants me to write down like, what are the things in my toolbox and to look over them every day so that they're closer to me as things come up. And I was thinking about like, water is a really helps me. It helps me as a theme. It helps me like physically. And so some of it is any contact with water I can create, whether it's going to swim somewhere or a bath. And sometimes it's just like, I'm taking a shower, regular shower, but maybe I'll razzle dazzle it. You know, I'll put some candles and like use extra oil, maybe scrub. Other times it's a little like what I call like free movement. You know, I've been teaching all these different modalities, but sometimes it feels good to just like put my mat out and just explore and play on the mat and just see where my body's wisdom takes me. Another thing that I was very surprised by as part of my fibroid recovery, the only thing they said that they recommended, which again, a whole other conversation, was walking. It was the only thing that is safe and also really does get you strong again. And so I started walking in my neighborhood for fun. And I'd never done that before because, you know, it's New York. So we power walk, we go to the place, we go to the train, we go to the thing, we're running an errand. But just to like saunter down the street and go to Prospect Park and walk through this like beautiful part of Ditmas Park and all these different areas. And I felt like a child, like actually like looking up. And there was this really long fall this year or last year. And I just was like mesmerized by the leaves changing. And I just could not remember the last time I just like took in the world like that. Yeah. And I know it sounds very cheesy, but it really helped me. Again, I think it's like I've come back to simplifying. Like sometimes, you know, I really love the bath with the oils and the salt and the chant and then this and the dark and the all the things. And other times, like, I don't got time.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just 5 minutes of breath work. And like, and it's, I think at the core, it's like I'm finding it as I'm talking about it, if you can't tell. At the core, it's also been anything that brings play back into my life. So I started drawing for fun. Like, I am not talented.
Well, yeah. I mean, will we be seeing it at MoMA anytime soon?
I mean, anything is possible, you know, in 2025. But I started drawing. And like for Valentine's Day, my husband and I, we had a lot going on. I decided, I was like, why don't we draw? And he was like, okay. And I was like, why don't we like draw what we want our lives to look like? And
kind of like vision boarding.
Yeah. Vision boarding, but like just draw it.
Yeah.
Like rather than like a struggle to try to find magazines. Yeah. Like, and I was like, don't feel like you have to draw exactly what it is, but like the feeling of what it'll be. And so I, not surprisingly, drew water.
Yeah.
And like, and then there was a phoenix and there was like land and it was very abstract. And like, I saw his and his was really beautiful and he's like gluing little gems on his. And it was just like, wow. And it's just so fun. And now we like have them up in our living room, just like looking at us.
That's so cute. Cause you look at that energy and you're reminded, yes, right?
Exactly.
Of what you want your life to
look. And that we like did it next to each other. And so, yeah, I think it's bringing play back into my life. It's communing with nature in any way I can. And it's my connection to water.
Kind of circling back to fibroids, did you receive any answers or clarity about how to move forward?
No. And that's what is hard. And I think what helped me in a very theoretical way, but it still was helpful. My father, right at the start of the pandemic, had emergency brain surgery. And it was from some kind of bleed in his brain, and it was very serious, and we almost lost him. And after this whole traumatic event, he did all this testing to find out what happened, how it happened, and he never got an answer for something as serious as a bleed in his brain. And so moving forward, I asked my surgeon, I asked, you know, I have a new like OBGYN, all these things. I was like, how can I never go through this again? And my surgeon looked at me with all the love in her heart, and she was like, there isn't enough research. The only thing I can tell you is a really high dose of vitamin D. That is the only thing medically that's been researched. And then with my holistic practitioners, it's like finding the source, the ancestral wound that kind of originated them is what will help, you know? And so for me, it's continuing to do my spiritual work, continuing to honor myself. The way that shows up now is actually in boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, like I have aging parents and the year started off with an unpleasant bang. And it's my instinct is to go and save them and do everything. And I've had to be like, I want to get pregnant in the near future. And in the midst of me trying to care for them in January, which was also my birthday, I had a miscarriage.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Tara.
I appreciate it. And I haven't even really like talked about it yet, but it was, this isn't about I blame them for the miscarriage or anything like that. It, as much as it's like, I need to respect myself way more, way more. I have been through a lot. My body is amazing, and let me honor her better. So it's been very clarifying to like, I can only do what I can do.
Yeah.
And that's going to have to be okay.
What you shared there about your body,
yeah,
especially when you have aging parents. I have aging parents as well. My dad unfortunately got diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's last year.
Wow.
But it did remind me of the remarkable things our body can do today.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps talking to us. Sometimes we don't listen. Sometimes we do. But one day we're not going to be able to do what we can do today.
Yeah.
So when I get up this morning and I went to the gym, I'm like, don't complain, Ginny. You can box, you can hit your trainer as hard as you can.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to do that one day.
Yeah.
And you're going to miss it. Yeah. And it's just one of those things I think that reminds us just of how much a source of wisdom our body is.
Yeah.
And how to listen to it. So yeah, thank you for sharing that.
And I'm sorry about your dad.
Thank you, Tara. I appreciate that. How has that grief process been for you?
That's the thing. There's been so much grief. There's been so much grief in so many ways. I just found out my mother was diagnosed with dementia, who like, I've always had both parents, but my mom is really like, growing up was like the parent. And now I have a much closer relationship with my father, and that's been really beautiful as well. And so like, this is why my need to like get up in there and fix everything up is like so strong.
Yeah.
But I had like a rough lesson in, no, that is not my job. That is not my job.
That's okay.
And I want to wholeheartedly get to that's okay. And I'm on my way there, but only because I'm so focused on being my healthiest self because I want to be pregnant. You know, and I think if I didn't have that, it would be much harder for me to like stand in an empowered way in this like, no.
Yeah.
I cannot, like, this is a circus and I did not create it. Y'all are almost 80 years old and there's no infrastructure for the inevitability of 80. And I can only do what I can do.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a hard lesson because I don't like seeing people I love suffer.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I have had to go through the same thing where my mom had Alzheimer's dementia. She passed in 2021. And
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Tara. But I hear you on all of that responsibility that's put on you because one, it's for me, culturally, it's expected.
Yeah, same.
But with my dad, I have drawn very clear boundaries of this is what I will do. This is what I can do. I'm here to support my sibling. I'm here to be talk to you and give you some peace. But I cannot compromise my life, what I've created and the healing that I've had because I'm giving you more time than you gave me. And that's not really the top of mind thing, but that really is the boundary that I draw for protection because you've got to do that.
Yeah.
And I think to your point, when there is infrastructure or what it might be to not be a support to you that was already created and messed up before you got there, you can't go in and clean that up.
Even though the cuckoo part of me is like, yes, I can.
Exactly.
Yes, I can.
Because you're a high achiever.
I am... the most high achiever in my brain.
Yeah, exactly.
And therefore, I can absolutely clean this up.
Exactly.
I just need to focus on it for 5 seconds and then it'll be clean.
Exactly.
And then every time I go into the madness of it all, I'm like, no.
Exactly.
No, I cannot.
Exactly. Because sometimes there are choices that are made without our consent or our approval or even our input.
Yeah.
So how can you corner me into doing something that I didn't actually opt into?
It's the cultural contract you made upon your birth.
Right. Girl, that's a great one. I didn't sign up for this.
Where's your family from?
Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka. Yeah, oh, you don't stand a chance.
No, I'm screwed. But the point, too, is it's like even if the internet, of all things, can ask you for permission for cookies and to opt in and unsubscribe, I am unsubscribing.
Unsubscribe.
Subscribe.
Yep.
That's it. But it's the truth. It's these cultural things that are put on us.
Yeah.
And I think that we do carry in our bodies in some way. So these moments of freedom and joy and lightness are so important as well. Do you think that's what's propelled your success? I mean, you are a Nike Global Master Trainer.
Yeah.
That's right. Do you think that's what kind of propelled you there as well in a way?
Yeah, my Nike journey has been so fascinating because I think the culture changed around the time I got connected with them, and I'm extremely grateful because I always felt like I had to fit into other people's boxes, you know, and like just because I'm so versatile and I'm multi-talented. So it's like, well, I can lean in more on this side if that's what's going to like land me this job that I need or that I want. And then what I started to realize was like, they didn't need me to do anything other than be myself. And I was like, what? Seriously? And then I started to realize like, whoa, all of my acting training, all of my fitness training, all of my like all the wellness, everything wellness, holistic, woo-woo, all of that somehow is actually making sense because I didn't go into it with some master vision of like, okay, I need to learn Reiki and then I need to learn meditation. Like, I don't know. I was doing it as my body needed it.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, like, I'm actually all right at this. Maybe I can share it with people and support them. Because, of course, I tried to do it with my family. They didn't want nothing to do with the hippie.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, what about over here? Does anyone else need this support? Does anyone else feel like this could, you know, be something additive to their lives? And then to work with Nike at a time that they were like, all your camera training, all your different training has made you be able to translate things through fitness on camera in a way that is actually resonating with people more. Because in my mind, again, the not good enoughness of it all.
Yeah.
It was like, well, I don't have as much like of a fitness background as some of these other folks. I don't know all the science behind every single little thing, or maybe I do, but because I'm not actively studying it every single day, I feel like sometimes I can't like whip out all the jargon like at the drop of a dime. And it was like, yeah, but you still know it and you still like create programming that makes sense. And your personality translates sometimes better than the super, super expert who doesn't know how to talk to people. So just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. And I wholeheartedly agree. I really love the, some people call it polarizing, but I think Nike is a marketing masterclass. The winning isn't for everybody and the women's campaign.
Oh my God, that Super Bowl campaign. So amazing.
It's true. Yeah. You're going to say shit, just do it. That's what I kind of got from it. I think they just...
They're going to talk shit anyway, so just go do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I think it's just, it's brilliant. What a masterclass. I want to kind of move to, you mentioned your acting and like you working beside cultural icons as well. So when I see people that I really admire, so in your case, you saw Beyonce, I have this silly fangirl way that I go into. I kind of look like a seagull and I flap my arms. So do you, how do you fangirl, Tara Nicholas?
Well, Beyonce, it's like suddenly I cannot breathe and I'm like.
It's not quite a seagull. It's like a choking seagull. It's just seagull.
And mostly because when we were rehearsing, we were doing the MTV Awards and I was brought in like towards the end of this like grueling rehearsal process that they've been having. And we're in this line and it's like very specific where you hold, where you move, where you this. And I turn and it's Blue Ivy. And I'm like, if I'm not hitting this girl and I don't, she's not, I'm just going to be a statue. Because I felt like if I did anything, it didn't matter if it was wrong or right. This, she was young and she had to like walk. She was being a stand-in for Beyonce.
Right.
And I just remember I was like as starstruck by Blue Ivy as I was by Beyonce, or like.
It's like the heir to the throne.
Yeah.
No, you can't. Don't touch the heir to the throne. No.
Or like we get to Madison Square Garden and we're rehearsing and I hear like, excuse me. And I turn and it's her and like her full look about to like do a rehearsal. And I was like, and it's like, I want to believe I can be better than that.
Yeah.
But not on that gig.
So you matched it.
Yeah.
Better than a seagull. I was more composed. I'll give you that much.
Yeah.
I would be, I'll probably scare Blue Ivy and then there'll be some restraining order on.
Flappy.
It's like, mom, it's a seagull. I was like, no, that's a lady. You should definitely steer away from Blue. Wow. Did you, what was that experience like though? Aside from the.
Aside from the not breathing. It was amazing. It was really surreal. And I think being part of that project specifically for Lemonade just felt like it gives me goosebumps just thinking about it. Cause it was like, wow, like women empowerment in such a real way, like a woman who has found herself through all sorts of obstacles, I'm sure most of which we'll never hear about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that album, it just spoke to me. And to be a part of any aspect of that journey just felt really special.
You've had some pretty amazing moments in your career, acting-wise in The Blacklist and with Beyonce. What's been your most surreal, I can't believe I'm here moment?
Oh my gosh. Weirdly, a lot of my Nike experiences have done that to me in many ways, whether it's like a last minute invitation to something and I show up and it's like Olympic icons and I'm somehow part of the shoot all of a sudden, or I'm like working with Megan Thee Stallion. She's so sweet and lovely and just being like, oh my gosh, like we're actually like friends and we're doing this whole workout and this is fun.
Yeah.
Or the first time Nike like flew me out to just like be an attendee at an event, and they flew me to Paris and paid for my husband, and we had the best time, and then threw me in for some media moments to talk about the brand. And it was just the first time that I was like, I just get to like be awesome in Paris, and I'm trusted to speak to all these big topics on behalf of, with like some of the like really big wigs at the company. And then in the acting world, it's just been, I think I'm always in awe of those opportunities, because even though I feel like I've accomplished a lot in acting, it never feels like enough. Mm-hmm. Just the nature of entertainment, it just never feels like enough. And so like when you meet, being on set with Queen Latifah on Equalizer, and I'm like, wow, she's so sweet and so beautiful and so talented. And you just absorb anything you can, like whether it's the experience itself or like a learning or anything, or working with Forrest Whitaker and just watching him on Godfather, if I'm watching how he works. And like my first time on set, not my first time, but one of the times on set, it was prime pandemic and it was hella stressful.
Mm.
And it was very like, if you test positive, you lose a job and drama.
Yeah.
And so in that environment, for him to also be like, he was giving me some pointers on what to do, like, okay, come in and then dish smart. And it's just moments I'll never, like, how do you explain that feeling?
Yeah.
You know, like each experience, it's like, I'm like a sponge. I'm like, I just want to take it all in and just take it all in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That would be surreal. Nike would definitely not fly me to Paris, because I'd be at the patisserie. So they're like, Ginny, go. No, I'm at the patisserie. Brand.
I need another croissant. Oh my gosh. Some of the best wine I've ever had in my life.
What's the impact you want to leave behind on screen and off?
Oh, makes me want to cry immediately. I really care. Like, I really care. And I want to just help women of color, Haitian women, be seen and heard. I don't know why it's making me so emotional, but.
Do you think that gives your inner child, little Tara, some comfort?
Yeah.
Because perhaps in some ways you weren't seen and heard.
Yeah. And I think even like so many women in my family are like wildly talented and still struggle and still cannot realize their dreams. And I think that's what's been an interesting realization of, like, that to me is the American dream. It's not go to law school, be an accountant, an engineer, or a doctor. It's like for you to pursue your dream and actually have a chance of realizing it. You know, we know this country is flawed, while also we know you can do a lot here,
mm-hmm.
You know? And so like now as I think everything I've been through in the last couple of years, it's like this realization of like, I'm not alone. I didn't get here alone. And it's not just me walking into those rooms, you know, and I want to open the door for as many of us as possible and really truly have like as much of a positive impact on us as I can.
Thank you for being so vulnerable with me. Tara, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure. I could talk to you for hours, girl.
Likewise, but, so fun.
Part one, maybe we'll do part two later.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.